We'll pretend we know what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like fun. Yeah. You know, I'll come up with something to say.
Well, you hope so.
Now, come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up, y'all.
N-E-R-D up. N-E-R-D up.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd up.
Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Tim Cooker.
You almost forgot how to do that, didn't you, Tim?
I did.
It's like 100 years since we've seen you and talked to you, and now we got you here. Welcome back.
I'm delighted.
Around the holidays, I always expect that, you know, we're going to have hard times getting together. But man, it seems like it's been longer than that. We even way past the holidays. Eric said he was going to join us tonight, but maybe he will later on. But yeah, he's not here yet. He's probably, he's doing all those artistic things down in Carbondale.
Right.
So what have you been doing lately?
What have I been doing? Well, I went on a cool trip. I went on a family trip to Germany and Switzerland over Christmas.
Ooh.
And now I've been working really hard to pay for it.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah. But it was good. It was good. It was nice to go connect with my mom's people over there and eat a lot. Like, I basically, when I go over there, I just treat Europe like a big open air food court. Their food is so good. So, yeah, it was fun. It was good. And, you know, home cooking too, which is always nice.
Yeah.
And, now I've been back and I've been working a lot and I've been seeing some good movies and watching some TV shows, and I'm thinking, well, why am I not talking about them on Nerd Up?
That's right. Yeah. So let's do that. Let's talk about this fun stuff. First of all, we have not yet talked about Punisher. We got to talk about Black Panther, and along with that, we'll talk about the TV series Black Lightning. Let's start out with the big one, Black Panther. That's taking the world by storm. Did you expect this to be that big of a movie?
I did not. I expected it to be big, but I didn't expect it to be like legitimate movie of the year.
Right.
Phenomenon types. Like this is more shocking to me in a way than even Guardians of the Galaxy was. Remember when Guardians of the Galaxy took over the universe?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe that such a weird movie with these weird characters was so perfect and great and everybody loved it. And then this movie comes along and it's trying to do something so hard, you know, which is this topic. It's really, really thorny and difficult. And somehow it does it like so gracefully. It's like, for all the worthiness we talk about, it's a fun movie and people leave it feeling like $1 million. I mean, it's no wonder why people are really taking to it. Like, I expected it to be good, but I didn't expect it to be great. And it's really great.
It really is. I mean, if I wanted to, I could nitpick little things here and there, but and which I probably will, but that's what we do. Yeah, exactly. I mean, overall, when I left the theater, I was like, I mean, I felt like after Guardians, it was just amazing. I was like, they did a great job. And one of the things I loved about it was, I cannot remember the actress's name, but she played his sister. And, you know, the techno geek.
she's so good.
I want her to be in a movie. Well, wait a minute. In the comic books, she becomes a Black Panther, doesn't she?
She does eventually. Yeah. When T'Challa doesn't want to do it anymore, he lets her do it. And so I would watch that.
Me too.
And I don't know if you know that in, what is it, in the trailer for Infinity War, do you see the part where Iron Man's armor seems to be coming out of like his collar?
Yeah.
You know? Like crawling over him, and I'm like, so did he meet up with Shuri and have a little conversation about suit construction? You know, I don't know. Like, because is she smarter than Tony Stark? She might be.
Yeah.
But she totally pulls off. I don't know, man. I loved it.
Yeah. I love seeing that Infinity War trailer. I'm just like, oh my God, can they put any more comic books in here? It's like, this is awesome. It's like those big crossover issues, like Secret Wars, Civil War, Infinity Crisis, you know, those things.
Yeah. And they're actually, like, I remember having my mind blown by the idea that they were going to make an Avengers movie that had, you know, these five people in it, right? Or
right.
Whatever.
Right.
And now we're getting Contest of Champions, basically, or whatever, you know, right?
I mean, they're combining everything, and I love it. And the thing is, the Black Panther, here's the deal. This year, this summer, we're going to see Infinity War. So I expected Black Panther to do maybe like Deadpool, you know, it was a February release. And I thought, okay, it'll maybe do that, maybe get up there because everybody's waiting for the summer blockbuster. No.
Yeah.
why do you think the reason is that it became so popular, besides the fact that it's just extremely well done?
Well, it's kind of, I don't know. It's how do you make a feel good movie about an incredibly depressing subject, but somehow they did it, you know? Mm-hmm. And what I mean by a depressing subject is, you know, okay, intractable race relation problems in America.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about disconnection of the African diaspora, where, you know, African Americans are severed from the African homeland and they from the African Americans, and all these like really deep things that this movie is about. And it handles it so gracefully. And that's what I think, like, it gives you all the rock and sock and excitement you could want from a summer blockbuster movie, but you get it in February and every aspect of it is beautifully done. So it's just like you've been, when the movie's over, you've been well handled, you know, like,
yeah,
everything about it is perfect. The cast is so good. And, you know, for women who are going to the audience, they don't have to like roll their eyes or get annoyed that, you know, the strong female character gets damseled halfway through the movie and needs to be rescued. You know, there isn't a drop of condescension to any of the female characters in the movie. The black people in the movie are given, I should say people of color, probably, I'm showing my age, but, but the people of color in the movie they're given something that we are not used to seeing in movies, which is that they're not treated as exotic pets. They're given the full dimension of human beings with complexity and personal agendas and all these things. And I mean, I just think that this movie reaches so far and pulls it all right back in, and it does it so gracefully. I mean, I here's the thing, this movie, everybody's talking about how this movie is shutting up all of the people who said nobody will come out and see an African-American action movie, you know?
Yeah.
Which is true. But man, I really pity the next one because it's got big shoes to fill. You know, the next big tentpole, all people of color movie like this that comes out, the comparison is going to be obvious. But the thing is, I just hope it's a good movie and it does well and that it keeps this coming, because I don't know, it's different too. Like, it's a different movie. Do you think people are into it for that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the really big things is the fact that it is so different. You know, talking about empowerment of the races here, another aspect of it is the empowerment. You touched on this, women. I mean, the women in Wakanda are in charge.
Yeah.
They don't have to wait on anybody. They're the ones in charge. The sister, you know, all creating all those cool gadgets. Everybody.
With the cool gadgets, she then grabs a couple of them and dives in head first when it goes down at the end of the movie. Like,
yeah,
she's not hiding like a Poindexter or something. She's like, all right, this is on. You know, let's do it.
And exactly.
None of the women in the movie they were all business when it needed to be. Like, I just, like, they weren't sidekicks or girlfriends or whatever. They're peers.
Yeah. And the king of Wakanda is protected by women, you know, the guards.
Oh my God. The amazing guards.
Yeah, exactly. When I saw that Michonne from The Walking Dead was going to be the leader of those, I'm like, oh, this is going to be good, because she's already badass. And she was even more badass in this one.
She's so good, like with the wig, and then she throws the wig in the guy's face. There aren't enough fingers for the chef to kiss them all when he goes, mwah, because that is just so perfect.
Yeah.
I could go on and on. I mean, I just, like, I think this question that we've been asking for however long, you know, is, will the mass audience accept people of color as relatable / aspirational figures, you know?
Right.
And this movie seems to indicate that that they will. I don't know. I mean, they've got the Marvel might behind them, and they've got, you know, this is 100% a Marvel movie.
But, oh, yeah.
So in a way, it's a really great test case for it, because it's in sort of all things being equal. You like Marvel movies. What about one with all these people? Mm-hmm. It did really well. So I'm hoping that studios are going to start trying to experiment and find a way to strike this gold again, because I just love it. I really love it. And I mean, Gil, didn't you feel like everybody behind the camera and in front of it, didn't you get the feeling that everybody was showing up every day?
Oh, yeah. It's like, no, we're doing this. This is serious. We're going to make this right. And they did.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's kind of like last year. Everybody was wondering, oh, but you'll never be able to have a woman as a lead role in a superhero movie. That's never going to happen. Well, we had Wonder Woman. Yeah. So then said the same thing. People of color will never be represented in a superhero movie. Yeah, well, we told you it's different. And you see all these memes online that, you know, and pretty much most of them are hateful, you know, talking about how you know, trying to show a dominant race, all this. I mean, I don't know. It's just scare tactics. People are weird anyway. But one of the things I saw someone saying, yeah, a black superhero will never make it. And then they said, they were going to empower the black people. They're going to start rioting because of this, and black people are going to take control. I'm like, no, you're thinking of the Philadelphia Eagles after a Super Bowl.
They're just blowing off steam.
Yeah, exactly.
it's ridiculous, but anybody outside that media bubble is going to see what's really happening, and what's really happening is kind of beautiful. I don't know, man. I mean, I remember like I don't understand people who are mocking color for thinking this movie's a big deal. Like, I remember, I don't know, it was right after Obama got elected the first time, and Chris Wallace was on The Daily Show and kind of mocking, you know, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert about, you know, having their emotional moment during the inauguration. And Jon Stewart like just turns on him and he's like, yeah, how weird is that to have an emotional reaction to the first black president, blah, 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 all this stuff, you know. But meanwhile, there's Chris Wallace just smirking away, because, you know, some people are always going to want to be
honest,
but I don't know, man. I'm sitting there and, like, you know, next to me was a married couple. The mom had her phone out for the first, I don't know, for a good chunk of like the first 10 minutes of the movie. With the sound making little clicks and stuff
as she's doing the thing, messages.
And I'm just sitting there thinking, you know, normally I would kind of put, I'm not very tolerant of that kind of business, but I was like, don't be a jerk, just watch the movie, you know. And she had her daughter, and her daughter came over, and her daughter couldn't have been more than like 4 years old, crawls over and sits on her lap and is just rapt staring at the movie the whole time. And both of them then just got super into it. And it was just the sweetest thing, you know. And I'm looking around, and so many people like were just, when she calls what's his name, Martin Freeman, a colonizer, got a big laugh. You know, it's like, I don't know, it was funny. It's I just think it's great that, like, I've been able to go to movies and see myself my entire life.
Right.
The version of this from my childhood is Star Wars.
Yeah,
and like Luke Skywalker, I was a farm boy who wanted to get the hell out and, you know, dreamed of what was going on out. You know, like, I so identified with Luke Skywalker.
Right.
And it's easy. You know, he had light hair. I was blonde. You know, the whole thing. Like, I just kind of related to him. And what's it going to do to kids now who go see this movie?
Oh, yeah.
And see T'Challa and see, you know, see all the women in the movie and everybody in the movie. Right. And hey, even Killmonger, we didn't even get to that. We didn't even get to the guy who might be the best villain in Marvel movies, period. Oh, my God.
Well,
I know you were a fan of the performance, right?
Yeah, it's only the performance. It's only there's a couple of scenes that he just didn't sell it for me, basically. And
I gotcha.
You know, but that's okay. The first, you know, the movie was freaking awesome. So, I mean, he was still awesome, but there was a couple of moments I'm like, it kind of almost took me out of the movie, but how can you get taken out of that movie?
No, not very much, you know?
Yeah.
And I just mean, like, as written, what he, you know, yeah. You watch the movie, like, well, he's not wrong. Like when he's in the museum, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, he says that about, no, I'm not paying for this. You know, the people who brought him here, did they pay for him? No, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's what was shocking about the movie is it had so much real talk in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But right to the end. And that's the thing. It's so hard to do that and not make you roll your eyes or not make you like be like, oh my God, that was so heavy handed. Somehow they did all of it and they made you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And you never felt like you were being lectured. I don't know. It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, and the thing about it is not only that, but it had a nice, well, it had a great message. I should put it that way. One of the things I pulled out of it is, you know what? Race and sex don't matter when it comes to movies, especially. It doesn't matter. They're all good. And you can't let that be a something to keep you, to hold you back. Do it. Do it right. I mean, first of all, they did it with a freaking talking raccoon. Now they can say, okay, let's talk with humans now, you know? So, it was just an astounding all-access movie for everybody in the world. I mean, I remember reading Black Panther comics. And, all the adventures in Wakanda, it's like, oh, how are they going to put this in the movie? And oh my God, they sold me on Wakanda. I definitely believed Wakanda exists.
Oh, I want it to be real. I wanted to, like, there were times when like I was tearing up and Teresa was next to me actually crying because, you know, you wish it was real.
Yeah.
You wish Wakanda could save us.
Exactly. Yeah. Please.
That's such a beautiful movie. And that gets back to the design too. I mean, the African inspired design in the movie was just nuts. And this is me as a designer talking. Like, I feel like the Marvel movies have always been solid, sometimes really strong design, but always at least solid. You know, they look good.
Right.
But there also was kind of a similar aesthetic going through them all. And I feel like the last three, right? Or I don't know if it's specifically the last three, but like Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor Ragnarok, and this, I feel like they've really taken the design to the next level and really, really pushed it to someplace that like a level of success and inspiration and ambition that it hasn't been in before. Like Thor Ragnarok is the most comic book looking movie.
Oh God, wasn't that awesome?
And it's gorgeous, you know, and Black Panther is just, it's sumptuous. I mean, the costume design is ridiculous and Wanda looks amazing. And I don't even know what to say. I mean, every part of the movie just looks so good. And when I saw it the second time, that was one of the things that I just kind of sat back and let it all wash over me, how beautifully designed everything was. And really tasteful, like nothing in it looked stupid.
Right.
Not even the guy with the plate in his lip and the green Riddler suit.
You know,
seriously,
when I first saw him, at first I chuckled a little. Because, I remember that as a kid, National Geographic, the tribesmen there. But the way they portrayed him, he wasn't just a tribesman. You could tell he was in charge, you know?
Yeah.
And
he's on footing with those others. And And he has incredible dignity and everything. And I mean, I'm not saying that I normally look down on somebody with a plate in his lip, but what I'm saying is that's a bold look to do.
Yeah, exactly. You could almost be racist with it if you went too far.
Well, no, exactly. And to take it out of like kind of with the robes and feathers or whatever my colonizer's brain comes up with, when I think of that. But to put him in that insanely sharp, I mean, didn't you think he looked like the Riddler in a couple of shots? I don't know. When I saw like green suit and everything, I was like, oh man.
The Jim Carrey Riddler.
Oh no. I'm talking about Frank Gorshin.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, but it took me a second to think of the name, and that's what can I do? I was just knocked out by it. Like the costumes of the Dora Milaje. That leather and armor is just stunning. Like, oh my God, wait. Hey, I can bring this up because you're a comic book guy. I am a comic book guy, right? M'Baku, the man, I've never liked that character in the comics because I'm like, okay, A, he came in and cheated to win with Kwan.
Yeah.
So that he could become the king. And he's a total you know, jackass. And every time he gets on the throne or whatever, he ruins it. Like, he's like, there's some Marvel villains that I really like, and then there are others where they just irritate me, and he's one that always irritated me. Plus, I always felt like there was something vaguely racist about it, but I couldn't quite say for sure, you know, the guy in the white gorilla suit and everything.
Right.
And they did him in the movie where he starts as an antagonist and in the end becomes an ally.
Yeah.
And maintains his honor and his independence the entire time, and he's hilarious.
Like, yeah. Yep.
Like, there are no wasted characters in this movie. Every character, Ulysses Klaue, right?
Oh, like, my gosh. Well, Andy Serkis is just phenomenal anyways.
He was hilarious. Yeah. I mean, what a creep. He's just like this horrible little goblin and always just... No, he's great. He's great. I'm gonna go see it again.
Let's go. Well, let's talk about the they're trying to do the same thing on television. And you've seen a few episodes already of Black Lightning. First of all, a lot of people got to realize back in the day, it was the 70s when a lot of these guys came out. Blaxploitation was big. And, you know, we had Shaft, Dolomite, Superfly, you know, things like that. That was the black movies at the time. And Marvel, you know, creating, mainly Marvel anyway, well, I guess DC too, create these heroes. Every person of color, they would have to have black, like Black Lightning, Black Panther. And there was a time when I'm like, oh, gosh, come on. But now, looking at it, it's like they're pulling it off. They're actually like, okay, it's not bad. No, we're proud of it. Take it, you know. And now they're doing that with the TV series Black Lightning. Now, when I first saw that they're coming out, I'm like, oh, they're just doing this because Black Panther's coming out, whatever. But no, they're telling their own story, and I like the story they're telling on the series. Now, you've got a chance to watch a few episodes of it. What do you think of this series?
Oh, I think it's solid, and it's interesting because I kind of feel like. I mean, yeah, you can say that they were kind of planning this to coattail on Black Panther, but I also think it's a natural progression from where they've been in the CW trying to do sort of the, you know, they've had some success with sort of the B-list characters like Flash and Green Arrow. And then they go down to the C-list for Legends of Tomorrow, and that's doing all right, I guess. It's still beyond, right?
Yeah.
And naturally, once you've had enough white dudes prove that it's going to work, they'll eventually, you know, try something else. And what's great about this show is that, like, I feel like it's a moment because, you know, politically there are communities in the country that I think are really ready to be a little more assertive about their place in public life.
Yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of people who are getting tired of just sort of waiting for it to happen, and they're starting to do what they want to do and just get out and make it happen. So you see a lot more people running for office. You see a lot of things that I think are in some part a reaction to, you know, what something must have happened a couple of years ago. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but
maybe.
Yeah, I know.
It has something to do with the color orange. I know that.
yeah, that's right. So, okay, that's as close as we're going to get. But I think that it's a moment right now.
And
it's a time people are very receptive to this sort of thing. So, and that the voices that maybe had been more marginalized are starting to come in a little closer to the center, a little closer to the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, this show is a really natural outgrowth of it. And what I think is beautiful about it is that it doesn't take place in this same kind of, very stylized, like I feel like Flash is in sort of a kind of sanitized Never Never City. You know, it's not bad. It's not something I dislike, you know, just like, what's the one? Is it Star City, Starling City?
It's now Star City.
That's right. Right. That it's kind of this gritty Gotham-esque place. And I was expecting a really fantastical setting for this show. And it's interesting that they've gone the other way with it. And they're trying to be very real, you know, I mean, not his costume. Okay. You know, like, I'm not going to really comment on the costume. I'm not a big fan, but I don't hate it anyway, but, But what I like about the show is the race material in it is surprisingly real, you know, and the frustrations that they voice aren't just kind of waved away, and they kind of just leave them to hang there. And I really wonder how sustainable this is, you know, this level of real in a show like this over time.
But right.
I don't want to say that I think it's not sustainable. I hope it is, but I've never seen this. Like, it's weird to see something like a version of The Flash that is so much more relevant to me. Yeah. I don't know, you know, if it's that or it's, you know, oh, Barry can't get with Iris because he can't time travel to find the right one, or I don't know. Actually, I'm not dragging The Flash. Flash is a fine show, but I don't know. The way they talk about this stuff on the show, it's surprisingly authentic, right? Do you feel that?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, they all have their Dawson's Creek moments. I mean, especially Arrow, I've noticed. But anyway, for the most part, they're doing a great comic book rendition of these stories. I mean, especially The Flash. Okay. Now, Arrow, like you said, dark and gritty. However, the Arrow started dark and gritty, you know, kind of like the Batman movies. And then Flash came out, and Flash, they did it completely like a comic book. Now Arrow is starting to be more and more like a comic book. It's starting to fold up and say, okay, we can do this with a fun aspect. And then a Supergirl. I mean, we know how awesome Supergirl is.
And so, that's great.
Yeah. And now the thing is, I'm not liking, and that's what they're doing with Black Lightning, is Supergirl's in another Earth, another multiverse Earth. Black Lightning is supposed to be in one that's not even Supergirl or Flash or Arrow or any of those others. So,
you're kidding, really?
Yeah, that's not going to have anything to do with the other two universes, but I know there's going to be a point where they say, you know what, we need to. So maybe they'll do another multiverse thing like they're doing with Supergirl whenever they need to put her in. So I don't know, but yeah, I heard that they weren't going to be apart.
That's probably for the best, though, because, like, I don't know if I want, like, Barry Allen and Felicity Smoke showing up every three or four episodes, you know what I mean? Like, if they save it for like a once a season Crisis on Infinite Earth kind of thing, or Crisis on whatever, you know, like the JLA always used to do the annual Crisis crossover. That's cool. And I think it's a great evolution of that. I don't know. Like you were saying, the Dawson's Creek moments, like Teresa and I call those moments piano music time. You know, everything stops and the two characters talk and there's piano music. But what's interesting about this show is the music is like way better.
I love the music in this.
It's just like the piano music isn't as cheesy. So I have more patience maybe. And I don't know, man, I'm digging it. And,
Go ahead.
Well, we were talking about the real thing, and like so much of these shows, I think on a certain level, if you're going for the comic book thing, especially, you're going to get a lot of wish fulfillment. And like Barry Allen's power, that's all about wish fulfillment. It's so great to be able to do that.
Right.
And the thing that I thought was fascinating in this episode is, it was the one that I just saw, episode four, where the older daughter, you know, she's all excited to go out and do some good.
Right.
Well, first of all, I loved her going and facing off the drug dealers in her Mini Cooper, which is like, Mini Cooper, you know, like the least threatening vehicle ever. She goes and she confronts the two drug dealers and she hits each of them once and knocks each of them back, like, I don't know, 15 feet or something.
Right.
She goes and checks on them and she sees that they're really hurt and she freaks out and she's like calling 911. And I'm like, I did not see that coming.
It's fantastic. I expected her to smirk and just, you know, like, huh, gotcha. But no, she was concerned. It's cool.
And freaking out. Like, she's like, what did I do? I don't know. I really like what I'm seeing on the show. I mean, it's still a CW show. It's like Black Panther, you know. If you don't like Marvel movies, you probably still won't much like it. But because it is that, and this is a CW show, but the stakes are just so much higher. Yeah. You know?
Well, one of the things, I mean, I was kind of concerned with this. Black Lightning was never in my in my sights. You know, I mean, I think I read where he was appeared with Batman or something one time.
He was in The Outsiders.
Yeah, The Outsiders. That's it. And you know what? They mentioned them on The Flash or something like that the other day. Anyway.
Oh, it was on Black Lightning.
Was it Black Lightning? Okay. So, he was, okay, now I get it. But yeah, I saw him in those comic books. And the thing I hated when I read those is whenever he would wear the Black Lightning costume, he would talk in, well, for lack of a better term, jive, you know? And it's
I don't remember.
normally he was the, I don't know if he's a principal, but he's definitely, you know, someone in the community that was, prominent. But then when he'd put on the costume, he'd talk in jive so people wouldn't recognize him. And I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And I'm so glad they're not doing that.
Oh my God, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, they are bringing, like you said, the oldest daughter. I know the next one, the other daughter is going to get something too, because in the comic books, there's Thunder and Lightning, his, daughters. So.
Oh, all right.
So yeah, the strong one right now, that's Thunder, and Lightning will be the younger one, and they come across their own powers, and it's like they eventually team up in a couple times. So, but I'm kind of looking forward to that. So that, you know, being in their own universe, they can stay in their own universe because they're creating their own heroes.
Yeah, and it's got its own feel, and I don't know. Oh, and villains, right? I got to give some love to Tobias Whale and Lady Eve.
God, is that guy awesome?
He's really good. He's really good. And like, I don't know, he's very menacing. He's a very scary dude.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lady Eve is funny because when he first started meeting with her, I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, like I thought she was kind of just a dumb comedy character, but then she's got this really scary kind of like steel.
Yep.
And I don't know, like they're both kind of visually interesting and, you know, with her outfits and then his just kind of general look, and they have personalities. I don't know what to say, but I really like the show a lot, man. Poor James Remar. That's what I was going to say. I mean, like, I'm sure that he's making good bank off of this show and everything. And like James Remar probably, like, there's a thing where I call it the Charles Grodin, right?
Okay.
Charles Grodin can make as many crappy Beethoven sequels as he wants because he was in Midnight Run, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like James Remar, Charles Grodin, probably all the way back in The Warriors.
Okay. Yep.
If he didn't do it then, he did it in Drugstore Cowboy. You know, if he didn't do it then, he did it in Dexter. What I'm saying is, if James Remar wants to pick up the check by being on this show, it's fine. He's a good actor. He handles all this stuff competently.
Yeah.
But he gets the most boring dialogue. Like everything he says, it's just either the city needs you or it's all exposition.
Yeah, I'm hoping they get better dialogue for him. Yeah, you're right on that.
Yeah, I guess it's just because, like, this guy is one of my favorite actors, period. And he can handle such complex characters. I mean, Dexter, right? So hopefully they can you know, get a little more invested in him and have him be kind of, because I want to like his character, because like I said, he's my favorite dude, but not the way they're doing him right now.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, Eric Billingsley and I went to some horror convention. It was it was weird for a horror convention, but they had a reunion of Warriors. Michael Beck, James Remar, and someone else was there. And I got to interview these guys. I got to talk with James Remar. And mainly I was talking to him about, you know, playing the dark passenger, you know, Dexter's father. And I said, you know, I asked him, I said, well, how do you go for a role? He goes, well, when they offer me the script, I ask, how long am I going to be on? He goes, if I'm going to be on long enough to make money, I'll do it. So I'm like, hey, a good way to do it. So he's
a policy.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, I mean, sure, you can be artsy fartsy if you want to and say, well, I'm like, you know, I'm only going to do Anthony Hopkins movies. But heck, Anthony Hopkins is Odin. So, you know, these guys can do whatever they want as long as they express their, you know, are able to use their talent for fun. And James Remar, I love him in this, but I do wish they'd tweak his dialogue a little more. And I think they will, because he's going to actually start making a more prominent role, I've noticed. So, but yeah, it's the right time for this TV series, the right time for Black Panther movie. And you know, here we are, two white guys talking about it.
Well, it's you don't have to be black to like either of these shows.
Exactly.
They're decent shows. Well, I mean, well, Black Panther is better than decent. Black Panther is like, I don't see anybody who likes a good popcorn movie not liking this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's so, that's the thing. It's like broccoli that tastes like ice cream.
There you go. Yes.
There's so much worthiness about it, but it just goes down so easy.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Yes. That's a great comparison. And I had so much fun in Black Panther. And you know what? I actually look forward each week, because I got my DVR set for Black Lightning. I look forward to when I can watch it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's on tonight. So, I've got that on DVR. So I'm liking that. I'm looking forward to all these good, fun stuff. And, we're missing one here. Go all the way back to Luke Cage on Netflix.
That's right.
That right there was so empowering. So it's like they're on the right path.
Well, and didn't Luke Cage, the day it premiered, didn't it like crash Netflix's server or something?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I did hear something about that.
Like, honestly, this audience is like a sleeping giant. I mean, there's a reason Tyler Perry is as rich as he is, you know? Well, because Hollywood just does not give a damn about these people, and it's like they don't want their money.
Yeah. 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 You're right. Absolutely.
Oh, and I feel like maybe that's changing. I really do. I feel like maybe now they're like, oh, you know, that money's pretty good.
Yeah.
And that it's counting for more, you know, when they do something. I don't know. I'm really happy because you and me, Gil, we've been around this game for a long time, like reading these comics, seeing these movies, mm-hmm. and all this stuff, and having the protagonist always be default setting, white dude, you know, like it's fine, but I'm almost 50 years old, man. I'm really enjoying the change of pace.
Yeah,
that's all I can say.
Yeah.
You know, I really am. And I can't wait to see Captain Marvel. Now that I've seen this movie, I mean, I'm not saying Captain Marvel is going to be as good as this movie, because this movie honestly feels like a miracle to me. Like just one of those, like, okay, I'm not going to say it's like on a level with Casablanca or whatever, just because it's still mystery. But Casablanca was one of those movies where it was supposed to be just another assignment, but all the right people ended up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody brought their A game to it, and it ended up perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like that, and you know, so you can't account for magic like that. But I, having seen this, I really want to see their female led film. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Because first of all, we were amazed whenever they had a talking raccoon in a tree, you know, become a popular mm-hmm. hero. Then they actually turned Thor around from this dark thing. I mean, they were going in that Batman direction for a while, especially Thor, the Dark World.
Yeah.
And then they turned it around. Ragnarok was like freaking awesome. And then now they brought this movie out, Black Panther. And not only is it awesome, fun, popcorn movie, like you say, it's got a message, ice cream flavored broccoli, whatever. It's it's like they just keep getting better, you know? They're not going backwards in any way, unlike DC.
Well, there's just so much confidence, and mm-hmm. you know, hey, that's another thing we didn't talk about, Justice League. Did we talk about Justice League?
No, I don't think so, but we should.
that's probably a topic for another show, but man,
Well, I walked out of that theater, Justice League, saying they tried. I couldn't say that, well, you know, Batman v Superman, I couldn't even say they tried. So
it's a shame. It's a shame that it didn't do better, because I didn't love it. I felt like it was a step in the right direction, but I have to feel like that's a big part of Joss Whedon stepping away from the Batgirl movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you heard about that, but Joss Whedon was going to write and direct the Batgirl movie, right?
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Just last week, he backed out on it.
Oh, basically. I didn't know that.
Yeah, what he said was that he just, you know, he'd like to say it was some kind of creative differences issue, but honestly, he says he just didn't have a story and he didn't realize it because everybody was being so nice to him. And okay, that could be true. I'll take it at face value. Or maybe it was the fact that, you know, his Justice League movie, which wasn't his, and he was trying to save it, but what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
We should call it Lipstick on a Pig, the movie. But it wasn't that bad. I don't know.
Like I said, I walked out of there saying, they tried. I mean, to me, though, with the Wonder Woman movie, you know, that was like phenomenal. That was like, wow, this is great. They're doing it. Oh, my gosh. DC's now going to be a competitor. Then you go to this one and it's like, that's still fun.
They got rid of Zack Snyder one movie too late. Honestly, yeah. if they brought in Joss Whedon from the jump on Justice League instead of letting Zack Snyder film most of it,
mm-hmm.
I think it would have been a much better movie.
Yeah. But
you can't put those schizophrenic halves together. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the stuff that I liked in the movie, I really liked. I'm totally like, at least not hostile to the idea of seeing the Aquaman movie this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. Or the Flash.
If that ever gets made.
Yeah. Hopefully it won't, but
I read the other day that it's going to be a Flashpoint movie and I'm like, are you serious?
Listen to this. If they do a Flashpoint type movie rather than the full story of Flashpoint, can't they go back and remake Batman v Superman and make it actually good?
Ooh.
Hey, they can erase all that crap.
They should hire you.
I'll put my resume out there. We'll see what happens. You know, one thing I think, actually, Justice League, while we're still on it, Superman was actually a little more Superman-ish than before. You know, not much, but a little bit more. It's like, okay, I can actually start to see where you're going, but you're not quite there yet. And I think
wasn't much more than just that he smiled and was kind of a nice guy who wanted to help. Like, that's basically all you got. But hey, you know what? Those are three attributes of Superman that didn't show up in the previous two movies.
Yeah.
So
I think what it was is when they had to digitally remove the mustache, they had to digitally put on a smile.
Well, you know what the deal is with the mustache, right? Like that they had shot almost the whole movie without the mustache.
Yeah.
And it was because Joss Whedon had to reshoot most of the movie that they did that. So, I would rather have the Joss Whedon scenes with the mustache retouch, which was weird.
Yeah.
And the Zack Snyder ones with the natural.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he comes out and is presumably just hell-bent on murdering everyone on Earth, or I don't know what, whatever they think makes a mature character. But, I wanted to like it more than I did, but I didn't dislike it as much as I was afraid I would.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. That's the best DC's going to get out of us, I think.
Other than Wonder Woman. I said, hey, if the right people are on it, that Aquaman movie could be fun.
Yeah.
Jason Momoa's got a lot of charm. Like, he reminds me of Rock.
Yeah.
When the Scorpion King came out. Yeah, I saw the Scorpion King in the theater. And when the Scorpion King came out, like, it was... I actually have a really happy Scorpion King memory I will share with you in a minute. But when it came out, you're like, oh, joy, a happy memory about Scorpion King. But indulge me anyway. But he definitely was big enough to do the part. But the dude has charm like by the bucket load.
Oh, yeah.
He's really, and honestly, Jason Momoa's got the same vibe. He's he's very funny. And like, I don't think he's quite as big at it as The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
But he's pretty charming. And he's I thought he was funny in Justice League. Like the lines he was doing where he was supposed to be funny, I thought you delivered that line.
Yeah.
You know, drop your bombs on exactly the right spot. So well done.
Yeah.
Okay. So my story.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's hear that.
My buddy Tom and I go to see the Scorpion King. I think it was Tom and I at Piper's Alley here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Which I don't even know if that's still a theater. I am old. And then we walked out and we're like, oh, that was really good. And then we're walking, you know, out of the theater, you know, it's a multiplex. And we see another one. This is Fellowship of the Ring, because that was in theaters.
Ah.
And so we just walked there. And it's like halfway through Fellowship of the Ring. And we just sat down and watched the rest of it. And we're like, okay, yeah, this is a lot better.
You know, I don't think I ever saw Scorpion King.
I actually really liked it at the time. Yeah.
If I did, I don't remember it.
It's not a smart movie. It's not a great movie. But what it is to me, it felt like a really loving attempt to recapture 1980s direct-to-video barbarian movies. But with the 90s on it, you know? And before Lord of the Rings came out, my buddies and I did this thing called Fantasy Movie Derby 2000. And we'd get together, I think at least maybe every other week or, well, anyway, once or twice a month, and watch some old fantasy movie that had been great for us when we were playing D&D in high school. Because we had the idea, like a year before Lord of the Rings came out, the Dungeons and Dragons movie came out. You remember that?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, my buddy Tom and I go to see it. And I was working at a marketing agency that had gotten a bunch of like promotional stuff for Lord of the Rings in, and nobody had seen it. Like the internet was barely happening at this point. Mm-hmm. And I had all of this like beautiful like pictures and stuff. And I brought them along to the movie and I'm showing them to my buddy. And I was just like, everything's going to change. Like, because we watched this Dungeons and Dragons movie and it was terrible. But was it more terrible than The Sword and the Sorcerer or Hawk the Slayer or any of those movies, right?
Oh, wow.
So, right. Okay. Gil, you're with me, right? You were a kid in the 80s.
Yeah.
So what we did is we watched one of these movies every couple of weeks.
Wow.
In the year leading up to the release of Fellowship of the Ring. Like that was the mission, was let's get all of what we used to like in fantasy movies out of our system. And then, you know, the next summer I go to see The Scorpion King and I'm like, that wasn't bad. It was like one of those movies, but one of the good ones.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, like you're talking about Schwarzenegger's Conan. Was that on the list?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's almost a little too good to be in that genre, but yeah. That's like the top of that iceberg, right?
Okay. Let's say
that.
Okay.
Like Conan the Destroyer is somewhere near the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Second one with Will Chamberlain and Grace Jones.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's rated PG. Conan movie that's rated PG.
Well, actually, you know, when that one came out, I saw Grace Jones is going to be in. I'm a fan of Grace Jones's music from, you know, Love is the Drug. I always loved that song by her. And I saw she's going to be in this movie. I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be awesome. Like, no, it's not awesome. But as a popcorn movie. Well, let's talk about something real quick. Let's close out this podcast with one more topic here real quick. I hope we can talk about it real quick. If not, we can start and continue it at another time. But The Punisher also came out since we've last talked. That's Netflix, right. I want to say, okay, all these others had great messages and, we actually, something was going right in certain places. Punisher, you know, Punisher came in. I mean, a lot of people didn't like Punisher when he was on the Daredevil, second season. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't see why they're making a series out of this. But my personal opinion, that was a good series. I liked watching it. I mean, it had its moments. There's things about Punisher that a lot of people don't like, period. But I had fun watching that series. What about you?
Well, you know, just to give you my own history with the character, like when I was a kid, Punisher was a Spider-Man villain, you know,
right.
And he wasn't like Dr. Octopus. He would be a good guy, but he's a homicidal maniac. So he's a bad guy.
Right.
And then in the 80s, somehow he became a good guy anyway, even though he was still a homicidal maniac. And I never, so like politically, it always bothered me. And I never liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked him better when he was just a guy that Spider-Man had to stop, you know? And so I have baggage with the character, but coming at the show, like I actually thought he was one of the better elements of Daredevil season two. Actually,
yeah, good point.
Once his story starts to taper off in the Daredevil series, I felt like it kind of went to hell that second season. Cause then it's all about Electra in the hand, and you know me, I was not feeling that action. So, but Punisher, you know, I thought he was good. John Bernthal is a very soulful actor and he's able to convey a wounded soul of a guy who's seen too much violence really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And this show, this season, honestly, I was like, oh, I can't believe they're wasting a Netflix season on The Punisher. You know, a lot of people love the character. Honestly, I thought the show was really good. And it was surprisingly deep in terms of how seriously it was taking veterans' issues. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. The veterans aspect of it. Yeah, go ahead.
I just couldn't believe how central that was to the story. Yeah. And like, on one hand, and this is something I actually wanted to talk to you about, Gil, is that, and I actually recently rewatched Iron Man 3, and it reminded me that they used the same trope in there, which is veterans with really bad PTSD.
Right.
Becoming violent and dangerous in the homeland.
Yeah.
And it makes for a very ripped from the headlines kind of theme. And the question is, like, I guess watching the show, this is me as an outsider. You know, I don't mean outsiders, as a civilian. I've never been in the service. I'm not a veteran. I kind of have to look at it as an outsider. And I think, is this okay? Because veterans with real PTSD are a real problem that we're not funding adequately already.
Right.
You know, and so that was something that I really struggled with as I watched the show. But one of the things that kind of made me feel like it wasn't just for a cheap kind of effect or whatever.
Right, right.
A cheap button pushing was the amount of respect it gave to the group that these guys were struggling with, and the work the guy was doing in the group and the importance of it, and the fact that at the end of it, Frank Castle goes to group.
Yeah. Yeah.
And spoilers, everybody, sorry. But if you had told me that, oh yeah, they made a Punisher series on Netflix and you're not going to believe it, at the end of it, Frank Castle goes to group therapy. And I'm like, what? But honestly, they really paid it off. I don't ever want to see another season of Punisher just because I feel like they actually gave the character something of an ending.
Yeah, I'd agree.
But that part of it and the respect they gave to that and the centrality of the impossibility of what they were asked to do over there and what they were asked to live with more specifically, like how casually their lives were wasted, what they were being asked to live with, what they were being asked to cover up, and the way these different people responded to that, I thought was actually, in the end, and you can tell me if I'm mistaken, but to me, I felt like in the end, they were doing honor to the complexity of that experience and the impossibility of handling it, depending on the severity of what you saw.
Yeah, I think absolutely right. Because one of the things that, I mean, that's a touchy subject, you know, but they touched on it with grace. They, you know, they didn't hit you over the head like, oh, you know, the typical, oh my God, he's back for more, he's going to kill everybody. It was like some of the guys were doing good, you know? And so right. It showed the positive aspect of that as well. Let me give you an example here of how this PTSD works. My own personal experience here. I was in the Navy. I was an air traffic controller of sorts, and we were involved with a thing called Operation Praying Mantis. And what it was is back when Iran was the enemy and Iraq was the good guy, yeah, something like that. Anyway, Iran was mining the Persian Gulf, and one of our ships got hit, and so we retaliated. I was controlling the aircraft, and I was the one, you know, pointing them where to go, basically. That's where the controllers do. They tell them where to go, and they also tell them when to release weapons or that they have the go-ahead to release weapons. All right, so one of the airplanes I was controlling, they sunk a Iranian naval frigate, which is a big boat, about 350 people up to 500 people. Okay.
Wow.
They sunk this boat. And by the way, I was planning on staying in the Navy for life, you know, 20 years. I was ready to do that. I loved it. Okay. Then, basically they sunk this ship. We had helicopters go over and, you know, make sure everything was, you know, not, they weren't going to do something silly like launch a nuke or something like that. You know, so we had people over, and actually they were going to pull people out of the water if needed. There was not a single person found in the water. Not all of them died. Some of them made it. I mean, but they just weren't in the water, which is weird because the ship's burning and sinking.
Yeah.
At that point in my life, I sat there and said, you know what? I just killed a bunch of guys. I don't like this. And so like a year later, I was out. I don't know any different. I don't know if I just stayed in or not.
Huh.
But yeah, that's the way that PTSD works, is like all of a sudden you're human and you're like, I just killed people, you know? And it's like, it really hits you.
I've never done it. Like that's what I mean. I don't know this. Frankly, I've spent my life avoiding situations where I would know about what it feels like.
Most of us do.
You know, it's funny because I've heard that story from you before, Gil, but not with Dakota about the ship and looking for it and the people. And Right. And to live with that,
yeah.
You know, I don't know what it would be like to carry that. And that, I guess that's what I wanted, what I was wondering about with the show was if you felt like it did honor to the.
Yeah. And I think it really did, especially like you said, Frank Castle goes to group at the end. I mean, that shows right there that even the one most hardest hit can, you know, get some. Get some help. I think they even flashed up a veterans helpline at the end of the series or something, if I remember right. Maybe I'm
thinking. You're right.
So,
well, if you think about it, you know, let's talk about representation. You know, we just talked about, you know, the importance of Black Panther, mm-hmm. you know, not only for people of color representation, for women, mm-hmm. You know, Black Lightning and all that. And, you know, having Frank Castle, who is, you know, like I said, I have my own complex relationship with the idea of Frank Castle as a protagonist. And mm-hmm. I think that on these Netflix shows, they actually did a good job of making you understand his pain and his situation enough that I was invested in him. And so, yeah, you've got this guy. He is a protagonist, even though he's carrying all this, even though the things he's done. And at the end, he chooses to seek help and to try to find his way back.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that always bothered me about Frank Castle was his single-mindedness and that he doesn't want to come back. He doesn't want to. And so, like, I could see being a diehard Punisher fan and being very unhappy with that. But for me, as a non-diehard Punisher fan, I thought that was pretty great. And yeah, maybe for other veterans watching it, it had a similar effect where it's like, you know, this is real. This is good.
Yeah, and I think that's what – I think that series turned around the whole Punisher aspect. I mean – you think of the other Punisher, even the movies that were the badly made movies and or almost good made movies. Anyway, they were revenge movies, and that's all it was. This series, it wasn't revenge necessarily. That was part of it, but it was also, you know, a healing as sorts. And like the kid, he played Lee Harvey Oswald in that Stephen King series on Hulu. I can't remember his name.
Okay.
But he was the one that, you know, the one that was going that was shooting up that he had shooting everybody. And, you know, he was the bad guy. Anyway, he is like an extreme. I mean, OK, not to harp on me, but like my story is nothing compared to some of the people I know. I mean, I'm with the VFW. Okay. I talk to these guys. There are some stories out there that's way beyond, especially from the Vietnam veterans. And this kid here, he was in Afghanistan and, you know, he saw some severe crap and that seeing, you know, some of the other guys in the group, they weren't quite that bad. In fact, there's the one guy that made his all up, you know? So it's like seeing the differences of the different people and the different, where they were coming from, different areas, you know, different mindset. I think they represented it so well that it's like, it appealed to, I think veterans groups altogether should be watching this if they're not.
Yeah. I actually kind of dug how they touched on the phenomenon of stolen valor within the within the radical right, you know, like the armed militia type people, you know, the idea that they're I actually, until the whole militia craze of the last, you know, I think it was those idiots in Oregon, I think that like. That's when I first came to hear Colin Ballard, you know, and like, what a contemptible concept, you know? And so I actually thought it was pretty cool that they had a Stolen Valor character.
Yeah.
Punisher show. I thought that was great. And because honestly, like I don't have any standard to have a visceral feeling about it because I never did anything like that, but I will absolutely spit on anybody that does that. That's crazy.
I know. You know, and you got to wonder about that. What kind of person is it that has that stolen valor? The guy here, he wanted to be a hero, I think, in the Punisher movie. And the way he did it wasn't the right way. It was nice to see they touched on that, you know, make that part of the series without hitting you over the head with it like everything else they can do. Yeah.
Well, it seems like we're kind of on a winning streak here. So I'm hoping. I think our next up is Jessica Jones. So,
oh, yeah, that's right. That's coming out soon.
Those are big shoes to fill because the first season of that is still probably my favorite one of the Marvel Netflix shows. So
really?
I'm hoping. Yeah, I just love it. Mm. I just love it. I mean, the first season of Daredevil is great, too. But I don't know. I just really loved Jessica Jones. I think I loved how unique it was.
Yeah.
And I loved how I've always found David Tennant to be innately creepy. And like, I'm sure he's a lovely person. I just mean his performances. There's always something that kind of squicks me out. I don't know what it is. And the way they used him in the show, he's so good. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love both of those because you got him and you got Vincent D'Onofrio in Daredevil. So, all right. I don't have to choose, right?
No. They're all in the same world and they'll all be coming back and forth. Even if they die, they'll come back. But yeah. Well, I'm wondering what they're going to do as a villain this season on Jessica Jones. I've been avoiding every spoiler, everything else about this season. I don't even read any interviews. I just want to see it when it comes out. So I'm curious to see what the bad guy is going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I revisited that show last year, mm-hmm. In the run of Defenders, and it holds up if you watch it again. But the big dangling thread from the first season is how did she get her powers and what is the government program that links to the other guy. So I would be surprised if this season doesn't involve some of her looking into that action.
Mm.
I just don't know what she's going to find, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah, because that origin story in the comics, it was kind of muddled, I thought, her origin story. But
yeah, I don't remember. Yeah.
I want to see how they do it on the series. Because he can't. Because wasn't it like in the comic book, wasn't there something about that, you know, she almost got the spider to bite her that, Spider-Man had? Almost something about Daredevil almost got hit by the same thing, but she missed that. I mean, everything that almost happened to everyone else almost happened to her. There's like, I forget what it was, but I read that one time. I'm like, wow, what's her powers now then? And I'm curious how she got those. All right. Well, I think we have talked nerdy long enough. I mean, we've been doing this.
I don't know, Gil. I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, well, you know, you're at a point there. I could actually do this all night long, but then my work would suffer to the morning and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah. All right.
The real world comes in. But anyway, we're going to have to definitely get together more often again because this podcast needs to keep going and going and going. And for people listening, you've heard me talk about the Indiana Toy and Comic Expo in the past. Well, this year they're going to be doing it, and they're actually doing a podcast representation, if you will. They're going to have some podcasters there, including your very favorite Nerd Up podcast folks. And we're trying to get everybody together for it. So far, everybody is wanting to. It all depends on what real life says otherwise. So, but I'm definitely going to be there because I go every year. And you're trying to go too, right, Tim?
I would like to, yeah. I very much hope to. I've never done one of these with you guys, so it would be fun if I can.
I think it'd be nice little, we're actually all together in the same room type thing, you know, who knows what kind of tilt of the axis we could create. So, all right. Well, once again, thanks for joining us. Tim, thanks for joining, coming back again. We're going to get everybody together on one of the future ones. We'll get back to in the swing of things of everybody getting back together and we'll continue to talk nerdy. I mean, we got a summer full of stuff coming up.
And oh my God. Oh my God. It's going to be crazy. You're going to have to record more because there's just so much coming out this summer. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things is that I think we might be doing a podcast like every other day because when they start releasing these things, oh my gosh, it's going to be nonstop. And I mean, there's one I'm not really excited about, but curious. And that's the Venom movie. I'm like, what? I'm going to have to see what they do. And I definitely want to talk about that when it comes out. But yeah.
I'm very curious.
Yeah. I mean, Isaac, that's one of his favorite villains and or good guys. Depends on which comic you read. And so I'm really curious to see what his response is to that movie. All right. Well, we're going to talk a lot because there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. Tim, thanks again for joining me. And like we say at the end of every single episode, stay nerdy.